The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, welcome you to Porch Talk. Hey. This is your host, Alan, and I have Chris Beardo. Did I get that part right?
It's a hard one. Berardo.
Berardo.
And you're not the first one to mangle that. So.
We're doing a Zoom call here this evening, and man, I'm excited. So this is a big time. This is the 25th anniversary of your first record, and you're doing a re-release now of American Dust, right?
That's right. Yeah, 25 years. I can't believe it. You know, just blink my eyes. I wasn't even aware of it, and it had never been up on any of the platforms or available digitally. So we were just thinking about how come we never did that? You know, we always just sold it out of the trailer or at the shows. And as we were talking about, well, let's get it up there. And then I just did a little math and thought, oh, man, it's been 25 years this year. So it seemed like a good time to talk about it a little and, you know, spread the word around. So it's been fun. It's been fun.
Yeah, man. And just to walk it back a little bit, tell me a little bit about you. Where did you grow up at?
Well, I grew up in Westchester County. It's right outside New York City. It touches on it. And went to high school in Neuchâtel, New York, which is like on the almost on the border of the Bronx. But we're about 40 minutes maybe from the heart of the city, you know. So that was it. We were kind of like it's the first suburb of New York City. So it was a great place to grow up because you could be as a kid, you could be downtown looking for adventure in a you know, like I said, in 30, 40 minutes. But you were also, you know, out of all that. And, you know, it was nice up where we grew up there in the country almost. So we're in the woods anyway.
Right on. And so, I mean, what about like while you were in middle school and high school and just, you know, coming into your years, was music always what you were into? What was you into when you were in high school?
Yeah. I played football in high school and wasn't like, you know, like I did everything. And I actually kind of was more just did that sort of, you know, parties and football and girls. But on the side, I always had a band going, like with another bunch of friends of mine. I was always like, it's kind of a secret at school. But since I was 14, there's a guy who lived down the street from me, Kenny Krasny, and he was 16, which made him like worldly, you know, like he knew stuff. He knew how to like get stuff done, and he had a car and he had a basement with some amplifiers in it. So I was always putting together a band with him and doing that as well. And then it wasn't until like, you know, right after a couple of years after high school that I kind of really started to dial in on it for sure. But I always knew that's what I wanted to do. And it was always kind of there. I knew I wasn't going to continue playing football. I'll tell you that.
So. Yeah. And so when you started to cut your teeth into music, was guitar your first instrument?
No, I don't even play guitar. I'm the only guy. I mean, people all just figure that I do. But I don't even really play guitar. I write the songs on the piano. I mean, I don't play guitar. I write the songs on piano, and I don't even really play it on stage. I'm just the kind of singer front guy. but I've always worked. That's why I've always been in band formats all my life. That's why, like I said, when I was 14, I wanted to find some guys who could, you know, play this stuff so I could stand up there and sing.
Yeah. Yeah. And just front it, right?
Yeah. I like it up there.
But that's great. And so tell me a little bit about influence, like when you were first getting exposed to music and like when it would come time for you to begin writing these songs, who were some of the influences on you?
Well, you know, it was real, you know, it was an eclectic time because, you know, I'm not a kid in it, and, you know, I'm like having this album that's 25 years old. And so when I was growing up, the radio, and here in New York, there was something called WABC AM radio. 77 on your dial, and it was so fantastic and so eclectic that, like, no kidding, you would hear, it was like no big deal to hear a song by Yes, like a hit record, like Roundabout, and then the next song would be by the Temptations, and the next song would be Neil Young, and the next, these were like the hits of the day. They're Joni Mitchell and then Deep Purple. So that was, you know, the first thing I did was tune in at that station for years, and that really formed me in terms of just thinking more about songs and what are good songs more than what kind of songs they are. You know, I just gravitated towards, like, the, you know, things that were songs and singing. So that left me kind of wide open. But I did, you know, and then I did a lot of different things, and I would, you know, you get into any kind of band you can get into when you're 15 or 16, or, you know, just I'd go to auditions and just want to get the gig and do something and do the style of music they were doing. But later on, when I came back to what I really loved, I found myself kind of falling into the place of sort of, I loved those Southern rock bands when I was a kid, and the roots rock bands and Neil Young and the Eagles and things that they used to call country rock. But that's kind of that's a bad term now, because a lot of that's not great, I think, in my opinion. But it was, I just sort of fell back into the, just like American rock stuff, the Eagles and Bob Seger and John Fogerty, stuff like that. That was kind of, I guess, the thing that tickled me the most. So I started to kind of write more into that. And I'd been in these heavier bands and pop bands and heavy pop bands and bands in LA that were always on the edge of getting a record deal. And because of that, you had to sort of write a certain way, or you thought you did. But I always wanted to be more about songs and singing. And that seemed like a place for my youth that where I was always comfortable, and it's kind of where I fell into now. So
yeah. And so, like, tell me a little bit about, like, New York City during that time when you were first breaking into the scene. And, like, I'm from Alabama, and so when I think about New York City, I just, you know, the typical New Yorker, very tough, very, you know, to chew you up, spit you out, and it's gonna test you. Yeah. Is that what that scene was like then? Like trying to get in there?
New York's tough, absolutely. That's one of the great things about it. You know, it's the old story, like a lot of places, but New York people are tough. And when you're a kid, to make your bones there, I lived down there in a drug hotel when I was like 19 or something. And, you know, it was a rough place to be. But New York's also the greatest place to be. There's, so, especially then, so much going on, so much music, so much culture. The town would rough you up all day, and then at the end of the day, you feel like you won something, like you survived. So, yeah. So I loved it. But it was a better music town, I would say, than it is now. Like a lot of places, you know, for rock bands anyway. Bleecker Street was still happening down in Greenwich Village. It was changed, and it was later incarnation of that. But you could walk up and down that street and hear 12 bands and sit in at four different open mics and jam nights and meet musicians and, you know, go in and to the bitter end and buy a ticket and see a great original band. It was good. It was competitive, like a lot of towns like New York, LA, Nashville, where people get off the bus and come there. So you get all the best guys from all the other towns that come there to, you know, see what they can do. And because of that, you get great people, but it's real competitive. And it's not a town for the timid.
Yeah.
So, but I met great musicians and great people, just as far as a bunch of guys to play music with and then to write music with. And then later on, business guys that, you know, I fell in with when I was about 20 that really were kind of big deal guys. And I wasn't going to stumble into that in another town. So that helped me a lot to really get started and focused on this being a real thing instead of just a way for me and that guy Kenny Krasny to drink beer in the basement.
Yeah, I mean, like, walk me back, and I'm just looking over, like, the press for this is do you remember where you were performing when Bill Allcoin
that's a good example. Yeah, like, I do remember. That's a good example because I was playing places like a place called Great Gildersleeves on the Bowery. That was a rough joint. And a place called Tracks on 72nd Street. We would play there all the time. That was like the kind of main place to play in New York then. And I stumbled into it's a pretty long story, but I stumbled into some people who brought me to him pretty roundabout. A guy who put my band in the studio, put a lot of money up, gave me a hotel to live in New York, and then started nosing around for who might be interested. And through that, some big producers and this guy, Bill O'Coin, came in through that. They said, you know, why don't you come down in here? We believe a little bit in what this guy is doing. And at the time he had already made Kiss. They'd already, you know, broken and made it, were huge. And he was just finishing up his time with them. He was their original guy who really made that happen. And he was just starting with a guy named Billy Idol, who, not just starting, but they were probably on their second album and just starting to break him right then. It was right before Rebel Yell. And so he was a big guy and a, you know, powerful guy in the business. And I was lucky to meet him. Like I said, that's a great thing about New York is the proximity. And we were in these big studios with a big producers guy. Like, at the time, I remember it was Gary Lyons, who produced the Stones and Foreigner and Queen and Grateful Dead. And, you know, we were lucky enough to be in these situations. And so Bill came in and he was into it, and he became really a mentor and a friend to me. He's a brilliant guy. He's gone now, but he's a maniac. He was, you know, like a lot of brilliant people are, he was a whirlwind, but he taught me a lot of the precepts that I still now feel about this business and making music and life, just about no sense holding back and, you know, like, you know, just not doing it 100% is for suckers. That's one thing he taught me. So, yeah, so I was lucky there to meet guys like that. Yeah.
And just to go back to American Dust, just for a second to talk about that. This is the re-release, but I really have enjoyed sitting down with it. And I've really enjoyed, like, the thought you had behind it. And, like, just to quote you right here, with the album Track, is it's a song about community, possibility, exploring the big broad idea of what life, what America is about. And, like, you know, and
who doesn't love the big broad, first off?
But, yeah.
Yeah, I did. That was kind of when I just had come back from, you know, we just talked about in New York, and then those people years later allowed me to go out to LA to do some things through them. You know, one thing kind of,
you got it with Bob Crew, right?
Yeah, right. They put me together with the great Bob Crew, who's a Hall of Fame songwriter, wrote all the Four Seasons songs, basically, and Lady Marmalade, and just a lot of great things. And so I was doing that, and LA just proved to me to be, it was just getting musically a little different than I wanted to be. And and I enjoyed my time there, and I had a great band and these great people I worked with, but it was just the time when they were, you know, all hair metal. And it just, you know, I realized, I think this isn't my best bet, because I could go to New York, where it was still more of a musical town to me for what I did. So, but then, when I got back from the LA years that I started to put together American Dust. And like we talked about before, I was just thinking about if I'm going to, it was kind of a restart. You know, I really thought I'd had my chances in New York and LA, and that I was kind of done. And boy, isn't that too bad, but I knew I was always going to make music. And I thought, well, forget trying to get the big record deal that we were always on the edge of, and forget the big managers and producers. I'm going to see what I can do just to make music. And if I'm going to do that, I'm going to do just what I want. I'm not going to do anything except, if I'm going to be poor and unknown, I'm going to play the stuff I want to play and write the stuff I want to. And so that year I came back here, and actually we always laugh and say the year we met, but my brother and I, Mark Douglas Berardo, who's a a singer-songwriter guy, but he wasn't yet then. He just he was younger than me, and we kind of had never spent that much time together because he was kind of a kid. We were like 10 years different. And I saw that he had taken up the guitar. And
the future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I said, well, come along here. And he dove in and we just went out in the bars and played, you know, like anybody's songs we could think of, and four sets a night, and drinking all the tequila and having a great time. It was great. And we were good at it. And then that got me into, like we were saying, that got me into thinking about, well, I love all these old songs. Why isn't that the kind of thing that I'm writing for myself? Why isn't that the, you know, it suits me, it makes me happy. So with his help, we did all of that for a couple of years. And that's when I started writing new songs on American Dust that way more country than I had been, you know, and even than I am now. I needed to restart. Like I had to clear the decks and just start over. And I thought, well, I wrote some country songs and some rootsy rock songs, and that was kind of just to zero things out, and it felt good. So that's how kind of that happened. It was just coming back to New York and floundering and crashing at my parents' house and thinking, well, I got to think of something to do here. And why don't I just do what I love?
Right on. And so like just through the years, like tell me a little bit about some of the guys you worked with, like Tom or just.
Well, that we got that band going. Yeah. Right when I got back, like I said, my brother, who to this day plays, you know, he's a well-known singer-songwriter guy, but he still plays in my band when possible. So that's really one of the longest musical relationships I've had, that's stuck from then. And so I have a couple other things. A guy named Dick Neal, who I met, I put an ad out, and I needed like a guitar player, and he played things like Lap Steel and Dobro and stuff were like that I was looking for, and I didn't know that crowd, you know, but I had moved up to Connecticut by then. And, you know, so I've met him fortunately through this ad, and we hit it off and had the same musical ideas, and he knew the scene in Connecticut. So between him and my brother, Mark, and then we knew this guy, Tom Arata, from a cover band I had been in after high school. And he's a ridiculously great bass player and singer. He was in the Indigo Girls and among other things. And his brothers, Jerry Murata and Rick Murata, have played on every record in your record collection from the 70s, 80s, 90s. You know, the list goes on and on. James Taylor, Jackson Brown, just everybody. And Tommy is their brother and equally talented. But so he sort of, that was the nucleus of that band. That still, like I said, exists to this day. I mean, Tommy's still a great friend. Dick Neal produced with me American Dust that we're talking about. And then he produced the next record I made and the next two. And he was kind of the core of it. There was another guy when Tommy couldn't come out with us named Pete Zemanski, who engineered American Dust. And we did something in his bedroom and on 8-track tapes and anywhere we could. And these are guys that I still know. I was lucky to know him. I love these guys. And it was the nucleus of this kind of, in a way, the band I still have. Like, you know, guys come in and out over the years, but that was a lucky stroke of finding guys who played the kind of stuff and sang the way I was kind of hoping to rebuild myself as.
To my understanding, I don't think this place exists anymore, but I know during the heyday you were there. Do you have any stories from CBGBs?
Yeah, I do. Well, for instance, I never played there because it was a, you know, heavy joint. It was a mess, and you've probably seen them, all the documentaries and all. It was a hellish place, but it absolutely had the best PA in New York. It sounded, no matter what the band was or whether they knew or cared, that it sounded incredible in there. You didn't ever want to go in the bathroom. That's it. You never come out. It was a very dicey place. And I went there one night to see the aforementioned Tommy Morata. His neighbor was a guy named Timmy Capella. You ever seen like the big bodybuilder, long haired guy in Tina Turner's band for years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, honey. Yeah. Yeah. He was like, everybody came out of this little neighborhood in Harrison, New York. I can make you a list of these incredible musicians. And Timmy was playing one night, and as you do it at sometimes at CB's, he was going on at 4 a.m. That's the time. It wasn't even like a mistake. They're like, listed it in the Village Voice at 4 a.m. And he did like a porno rock show. It was just insane. And I remember going to that, and I remember that there was a friend from Italy, a friend of my father's, a business associate of my father's, and his kid was staying with us for the summer and didn't speak much English and didn't understand New York City. And suffice to say that I just watched him leave his wallet out on the bar twice while somebody grabbed it. I watched him wander away out onto the Bowery with some people that I know would have rolled him. I had to like watch this guy all night long. That's one of my memories of CB's, is that like you got to keep your head on a swivel in there, you know. But there were great bands, and I was too young to for the heyday of it, but. It was a place for a long time that everybody aspired to play. And that's when New York was, it was Patti Smith and Talking Heads. And that was, I was probably in LA when that really cool downtown stuff was happening. That was what was great about New York. That's, all the artists, the real art folks were there at that time. And, like Paris in certain years, that's where everybody was at that moment. And I was glad I was a train right away.
All right, Zoom is telling me we have less than 9 minutes before they are going to conclude this for us, but I've got 5 questions for you to walk it out of the door, and this is I'm having a great time spending time with you here. But
wait, before you ask me a question, Alan, you gotta tell where in Alabama are you from?
Kennedy. It is just outside of Tuscaloosa, and it's about an hour and a half west of Birmingham.
All right, because I had a girlfriend around this time of American Dust who was from Enterprise.
I know that. Enterprise is not far from me.
It's near Dothan.
Yeah, yes, yeah, it's yeah. And I'm getting mixed because I lived down in Mobile for a spell. But yeah, Enterprise and all that. Yeah, okay. on the coast.
Yeah, yeah, I remember because I was once at a Shoney's. I'll tell you this quick. And the waitress knew I wasn't from there. We were in Enterprise. And the waitress said to the girl I was with, she goes, "He looks like he's from the city." And she said, "Yeah, he is." And she goes, "Dothan?" Because that was the next big city they, Yeah. They but so that's great. I loved it down there. It's a beautiful part of the world. So,
well, just for our audience and for them to better get to know you is not only just with the re-release of American Dust, but just a little bit about your music and songwriting is what do you want the Porch Talk audience to know about your music?
Well, like I said, it's taken me years. Again, I'm not 15. It took me a long time to really settle into what I think is my point of view, and the way I really sing, the kind of songs I really feel represent me and the music I love. And so, I went, like I said, back to the roots and some country things. And now it sort of sits in the middle with the, I grew up in a lot of great pop rock and, so I think now just, American sounding rock with some acoustic instruments, it just hits me always in the right way. And I just hope it's, just honest music, songs with singing. I love singing with other guys, harmonies that stuff matters to me. So I think if you like, songs and guys who really play, that's, that's all I've ever kind of shot for.
Right on. And I wanted to ask this is, as far as shows you've done over the years, Where do you say was your best show? As a memory, I know it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how, you know. I know that the ones when someone asked me that come to mind are always, we did a, we've gotten to play shows with guys I love, like me and you're talking about the kind of music I thought back, what do I love? And been so lucky to play with a lot of the Southern guys, like a lot of shows with Tucker and, you know, those kind of bands, and Dickie Betts. We did a lot of stuff with, but I loved in America. We've been lucky enough to play with a bunch and hope to again. But I was crazy for the Doobie Brothers. You know, they're Doobie Brothers, man. They're so great. Oh, yeah. And we did a bunch of shows with them at different times. And the last three or four times that we had played with them, they were nice enough to always ask us to come out for the encore and sing, listen to the music with them. And they're just great dudes. And they didn't need to be like, they really were cool to us and, you know, just made us feel like big shots. But the last two times we had played with, I guess we played since, but there were two shows we did with them in Connecticut and at the Capitol Theater in Portchester, New York, back-to-back nights. And it was the last show that we ever did with our drummer, who was with me for almost 14 years, a guy named Polly Triff, who was our friend, and we loved him. And we lost him after that. He got sick. We didn't know he was sick, and he left us. But those were the last gigs he did with us. I always think of those because the band was hot and we were really, I've looked back at the tapes, you know, it wasn't just in my mind like, oh man, we were really hitting our stride. And so those stick in my mind as, boy, it's all, a lot of really good things are happening here. And, you know, we missed that guy. I'm glad that was his last gig to play something so great. And he was up on the stage in the encore too, with his tambourine and singing, and we were having a ball. So that was a good one.
Cool. And so just for those listening who may be aspiring singer-songwriters or wanting to get into the same facet that you are in, what advice would you give them as far as cutting teeth? What do they need to do?
I would say refrigeration repair or truck driving is what they do. No, you know what? I would say, like, shoot, if I knew anything, I would tell you. I mean, I'm trying to figure out every day, like, you know, but I know that I'm happiest when I'm writing things that I feel like are honest, that sound like I want to sound. One thing I got hip to years ago was, you know what I need to do? There's, when I complain about there aren't these kind of bands I love, and I started to think, like, well, what songs do I, well, what would I be if I could be the thing I'm always complaining it doesn't exist? You know, like be that thing. And yeah. I would tell people, I guess if they ask, like, you know, find the vacuum and see what is missing that you like to listen. You're driving around with your friends, crank it up in the car, and like, what do you want to hear? Or if you're at home and you're trying to get your head together, like, what do you want to hear? Like, what works in the world? And then, you know, try to provide that, you know, try to do a thing that makes you feel like that's what you would listen to. Like, I just finished cutting a song with my producer and buddy David Beta in Austin couple weeks ago, and I remember listening to the playback and turning to him and saying, like, this is the kind of stuff I love. so you know, write what you know, but write what you love too.
All right, and one last question to walk it out of the door, and thank you so much for your time, and
absolutely,
I really you. Enjoyed this is
me too.
What was your favorite part about this interview?
About what?
About this interview.
Oh shoot, well, we got it done. That means we figured out all the space phone technology.
Yeah.
And
we have gone to space.
and that, you know, I seriously, you know, I do these things once in a while. And when somebody asks you questions that make you think and they really do kind of fit what you're trying to say, it allows me to start thinking. I'm having a nice time here. I got a little cold drink over there and I'm just thinking about, these are good questions. Yeah. What do I love about that? And how was I feeling back then? And that makes it fun. It's just like, you know, talking to a buddy at the bar. So I've enjoyed that.
That is the porch talk feel. And for that, you are welcome. Chris, I'd love to have a conversation with you again sometime. And
absolutely.
I hope you have a great night, buddy.
You too. Thanks for having me.
All right, man.
All right.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.